Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Eileen McManaman, welcome.
Thank you.
When it comes to the opportunities that sport bring to a city, they are probably more than what we think about on the surface. Give me a little bit of an overview of, you know, what are the opportunities, what are we doing well, and where can we improve? And in that improvement, I guess, capture lost opportunities.
Well, you know, for many cities, sport is an opportunity. It is a bit of a PR splash, a bit of an advertising campaign, whether that be for business attraction or tourism. But really, in the last few years, there's been a few things developing in sport for development. Sport to provide economic opportunity, social opportunity, address social issues like diversity and inclusion. For instance, as you saw with South Africa's World Cup of rugby quite a few years ago, and what a unifying force that was for that country.
But how do we do that? So, you know, we had the FIFA Women's World Cup here in Canada, and a number of matches were played here in Vancouver. What did we do well, and then where did we miss out on opportunities to build on that experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we did well as a country was to put on a great sporting event. And that's that mm-hmm. you know, fantastic experience for the athletes, a fantastic experience for any of the fans, and a really nicely done event. What we didn't do well was to take that occasion to talk about things like gender equality, which is a very big issue these days on both the business front and the sports side. And the Women's World Cup presented a unique opportunity to do that, because Canada's hosting was the first time that that field had been expanded from 16 to 24 teams. The Men's World Cup includes 32 teams. Mm-hmm. So that was a big leap toward parity mm-hmm. on the sporting front. And we really missed that opportunity to deal with that. And we also missed a number of economic opportunities.
Well, let's talk about the parity issue first and then mm-hmm. come back to economics. How do we engage that, though? Because, you know, but I'm here to watch, you know, a football match between competing nations, and you want to now talk about, gender equality, parity for women. How do we introduce that into that environment and get, you know, spectators and non-spectators to be involved?
One of the best examples that we have was how they elevated the Paralympics to the level of the Olympics when Vancouver hosted in 2010. And they did that partly through coverage of those athletes, through always speaking of the games as the Olympic and Paralympic Games. One of the ways that we could have done better was, one, to put every ounce of effort behind the Women's World Cup in the run-up to that, to embrace that message.
So how would that have looked? When you say put every ounce of effort into that, how would that have been different than what happened?
What happened was, frankly, the tournament was left a little bit to the side. Many people didn't know that we were actually hosting the Women's World Cup until just a few months before. I think that, for instance, the federal government could have embraced that a little bit more strongly to say, yes, Canada hosts and Canada is a land of opportunity. We could have also taken great occasion to engage women business owners, women leaders in the community to talk about the Women's World Cup, and it's important in showing parity and opportunity for girls. We also could have extended that into the grassroots sports movement and looked at that occasion to encourage coaches to explore how they can coach girls differently to keep them in the game. Many girls drop out of sports between the ages of 12 and 16 when it becomes more competitive. Even if they are very competitive athletes, they feel other social pressures and tend to drop away. Also, the coaching isn't totally matched.
Huh. So as you're saying that, I'm going, okay, makes sense to me. Then comes down to the practical application of it. How do we start to have those conversations? Do they start at the local level? Are we going to mm-hmm. coaches? Are we going to schools? Is it a government issue, or is it that, you know, is it the sporting body that has to take it on? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. okay, how do we navigate our way through all of this to actually make that happen?
Well, that's a great question because, as you can imagine and as you've alluded to, there are many, many entities involved in putting on one of those events. It starts at the bidding phase. It starts at the thinking, hey, we would like to host this event. Well, ask yourself, like any business venture, why are you hosting this? What are your objectives? Mm-hmm. And what else could you achieve with that? So it starts in those early days, and that's why I really advocate for an expanded view of why are you hosting, not just a PR splash, but what are the economic, environmental, social gains that you can gain from that? And what's on your country's agenda that you could foster under that umbrella or with that platform?
Well, I can see why we would say, well, we want the FIFA Women's World Cup because it will get international coverage. It will, once again, raise the profile of Canada and, in the case of Vancouver, the city. And then there's money that comes with that. So isn't that enough? We've got that PR splash. How do you then get those people who are organizing to start to think beyond that? As you say, how do we now start to introduce the discussion around parity for women, not just in football, but in all walks of life? And if we've got this international plaza, how do we now then start to tease that out?
Well, the Women's World Cup was one example. Mm-hmm. But I think where you really start is the federal government and provincial governments and cities all invest in these bids and these hosting platforms. So where you start is there. And saying what are those objectives and what are the tenets of hosting? Mm-hmm. So what do we need to set as benchmarks?
Well, and so I know that you've been trying to do this. What level of acceptance are you getting from people who are at that government, those government levels who are in positions where they're making financial decisions about supporting this to say, yeah, okay, Eileen, let's tack that on. Mm-hmm. Is there reluctance? Is there acceptance?
I think there's an openness now. We're very fortunate with the new government that the Minister of Sport is also the former president of the Canadian Paralympic Committee and an accomplished Paralympian in her own right, Carla Qualtrough. Mm-hmm. And so just a few months ago, she spoke at the Vancouver Board of Trade, and she also has the portfolio for accessibility and or disabilities, I'm not sure of the exact title of that portfolio, and that's an issue, but they combine. And she has said that she feels we do need to look at the strategy of what we're bidding on, why we're hosting, and what that policy is around those federal dollars that go into those events, so greater accountability. And I think that she's very interested in beginning a working group on that front. That was a remark that she had made, and we've certainly approached, and we'll see how that goes.
I got to get you to hang on for just a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
So I can see a natural fit to say let's talk about parity when it comes to, the Women's World Cup. How do we start to identify opportunities to have social impact in other ways with other sporting events that may not be so international in scope, but are still funded by various levels of government?
I think you're always looking to the organizers of anything to say, how are you reaching the grassroots, and not just the grassroots, but the marginalized children or participants in the economy? Sometimes, on the development side or on the social side, it's addressing issues such as loneliness or cultural integration. It's not always an economic factor. There are many kids that don't participate in organized sport, not because they can't afford the kit sometimes it's travel issues. It's getting to a game. It might be that, language barrier. It might be that in their household that's not really advocated. Or it might simply be there's a couple of working parents who need that kid to kind of go home after school or be in an after school program where there's safety and security. And so they're not at as much liberty to move around and go off to the field and play.
So how do we start to overcome some of those barriers? What are some of the things that we have to put in place to address that?
It really comes down to some better planning for some of the entities that are either the sport organization or the rights holder who are hosting. But it also does come, almost every single entity in Canada receives public funding for sport, for hosting. Every single one. That's very different to the U.S. You know, the U.S., when they put on an Olympic Games or their Olympic Committee, is entirely privately funded. But here we have an opportunity because Canada does have certain values around social inclusion, diversity, economic parity, gender equality, to put that right into the documents that say, if we are funding you, these are some of the expectations that we have, and we do want those measured.
Sporting events also generate a tremendous amount of garbage. Mm. Like, I look at, you know, the arena that's around the corner here, and I know that there is a tremendous amount of waste that goes out the door. We talk about the fact that environment is important, and if these different levels of government are engaged, are they then able to start to say, okay, you have to start looking at the way that you deal with the waste? Mm-hmm. And would that not be also another strong contribution that these sporting events can make?
Absolutely. And in fact, some of them are demonstrating incredible examples that can be passed on. I'll give you a fantastic example out of the city of Richmond, which was an Olympic host city. Because the Vancouver Games had such a commitment to sustainability and really embedded that in everything that they did, Richmond took their learnings from that, and they have now created Cool Richmond events. So the city itself has procured water refill stations. So it's a portable thing that comes out and you can put your water, your reusable water bottle right into it. They have a bike valet. They have a green team that will come out and bring out the sortable bins. And so instead of just dictating to any event in Richmond, for instance, well, you must do this, and you must do this, and you must do this, which can be difficult for mm-hmm. organizers. They're on a tough budget. They're working with volunteers, very thin staff. They're yeah. saying, you know what, you make one call to us, and we'll make sure that you have the things that you need, and that's consistent. And it works really well for the city of Richmond because every single event, whether it's a small one-day street festival or a larger event, has that same fan experience, that same guest experience. It's clean, it's tidy, it's convenient for people. It gets rid of a lot of plastic bottles. It's fantastic.
When I asked the question, I wasn't expecting you to go there. I was thinking about, okay, the big events. And, yeah. and you know, but as you're saying that, I realized, yeah, virtually every sporting team shows up with, like, some kind of flat of drinks, and they're all in plastic bottles mm-hmm. and wrapped in plastic, and the food comes packaged up. And where does it go? A lot of times mm-hmm. you see it, like, littered around an already mm-hmm. full trash can.
Yeah. Well, it's going on with very, very large sports events and very, very advanced professional sports as well. There's something called the Green Sports Alliance, which started with about 6 or 8 teams in the Pacific Northwest 6 years ago, and is now almost 400 teams and venues and leagues that are members of this, exchanging best practices on how they're managing waste, managing water, managing energy.
So if let's say there's a coach or there's a parent in a team who says, I want my team to get involved in that, where do they find out any information about that?
Well, that one's largely for professional teams and
okay.
NCAA
okay.
organizations and big venues like a BC Place. And many of the Canadian venues are part of that. And the NHL is a league, is a member of it, and all 30 NHL teams belong to it. But a coach or a local league could certainly reach out to that organization and use any of their resources. There are a few municipalities that belong to that as well. So they could certainly call them and talk to them about that.
This is our second break. We'll be back in a moment.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
So what are some of the economic opportunities that if we're not paying attention to, like, the societal or environmental impact, that we're missing out on? Like, is there money to be also generated in this? Because if we look at sporting events, we go, yes, they're a good economic generator, but are we leaving money on the table?
My God, are we ever.
Really?
We really are. The best practice in sports events is to early on articulate what the procurement looks like for that event and buy local, which also helps you on the environmental, which also helps you on the social side, to include a local business with that. So it's laying out that timeline of what are we going to need, when are we going to need it. And these are all kinds of things, from flowers and small box lunch catering up to IT and AV equipment and service needs, translators, lots of things that you wouldn't think about are needed. You know, cups and furniture and all sorts of things. And those are great occasions to include local businesses in that process, make them feel like, well, when the circus comes to town, I'm not standing on the outside of the tent looking in. I'm part of that. I was part of delivering that, which really delivers on the bigger impact of civic pride and building up capacity and building up, cohesiveness in the community.
As you're explaining this, I'm realizing the provincial and federal governments, if they're dealing even with an international sporting body, they can say, you want to make this happen? No, you can't be flying that team in from Luxembourg. You have to hire local teams.
They can.
Or local suppliers.
They can say, our expectation is that you will do this, and here's how we're going to help you. We're going to help you identify those local people, and we're going to help you connect with, it might be a chamber of commerce or a board of trade that hosts some events and some training. We've done that ourselves for the Women's World Cup, for the Canada Games in Prince George. Vancouver 2010 did a great job of it, and the Toronto Pan Am Games did a great job of it as well. They made a very pointed effort to reach out to diversity suppliers, so women-owned, Aboriginal, minority, and LGBT-owned firms, to be a part of that. And went out, found them, educated them on what is going to be bought, how it's going to be bought, helped them understand how to partner or work with larger suppliers as subcontractors, and they measured it, and they did a phenomenal job.
So what is the difference? I know it's hard to actually put your finger on it and say, here's what we're losing money-wise, but do you have any sense of the scope of it that you can say it's this many millions of dollars that can go by the wayside?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that roughly $5 million went to diversity suppliers for Toronto 2015.
Which is good.
Which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a very, very large budget. But one of the other things that you build there is capacity in those firms to do international business, because many times they're supplying an international partner, or mm-hmm. at least a very sophisticated buyer. So you're opening new pathways to ongoing business that can be very difficult to measure unless we're asking them to report back. And we may see some of that coming out of Toronto 2015's great example.
Because you're
building relationships. But right now we're not capturing that. All we're capturing are how many hotel rooms did we book, and how many restaurant meals or sales tax and hospitality did we garner. But we're also not as careful about measuring, well, was that a net gain, or was that simply an offset because we pushed out normal tourists and brought in sport tourists?
Mm-hmm.
Many times they call it the Olympic effect. When an Olympics happens, the regular tourists stay away that would have normally been there, and you maybe get a lesser amount of impact. But we need to get away from only measuring hotel room dollars mm-hmm. and hospitality sales tax, and really look at that economic inclusion and local business inclusion.
Absolutely fascinating, the effect and influence that sport can have on so many aspects of our society. But I got to get you to hang on for a second while we take our last break. We'll be back in a moment.
Conversations That Matter is a not-for-profit program made possible thanks to the charitable support of the following and from viewers like you. Please visit conversationsthatmatter.tv and help us to continue to produce this program.
So we're doing okay, is what I'm hearing from
sometimes you. Sometimes we're doing okay.
Sometimes
we're doing okay, and that's part of the issue. It's inconsistent, and it doesn't need to be.
So how do we make it consistent then?
Again, I think it comes back to, and I'm very loath to point to government, but mm-hmm. because government is often the first dollar in, and they're very integrated in the hosting bidding process because of visas and things that need to be done. And permits that need to be secured at a municipal level. They're the first actors. They're the first ones who know what's going to happen. So by taking the best practices, and we've seen some phenomenally, and I mean at a global level, mm-hmm. Canada has world-class best practices demonstrated in both environmental, economic, and on the social inclusion side, and say, this is the standard. And not only are they best practices to look to, but there's a wealth of people that have implemented those and those programs can be easily replicated. So I do think we need to start there, at least as a wayfinder, if not a funder necessarily, as an entity that puts expectations and provides guidance and provides connectivity.
So to leave it all just up to the discretion of changing personalities in ministries, both as ministers and support staff, and so it's changing all the time. Governments, we know, tend to respond to public pressure because they want to be representing those people who elect them. What can we do as athletes, parents, people who want to support sport and so on, and all that it can bring, right from childhood through to late in our lives? What can we do to help move us in that direction so that in Canada we can, as you point out, set an example, but then stay consistent? How do we motivate our elected officials to say, yes, this is important?
Well, I think they have a sense of it, but one of the ways that you can do that, if I might share with you, we've started a petition on change.org that does address that and says we can do better. So that's one way that a grassroots person
can get involved.
So tell
me about the petition.
It basically calls on three ministers at the federal level, environment, finance, and sport, to say this is an important item to bring together because, as we know, sport is paid attention to by all of us. We all, it touches us all in one way, shape, or form. Even the person who doesn't enjoy it probably has someone in their family that absolutely loves it, and they're driving back and forth, and they're putting dollars into it. So that's one of the ways, and that calls on those entities to look at that as a guiding light for many other things that we do in society. But if you're involved with a provincial level of a sport or a federal level of a sport, if you're a person in a business whose business sponsors or acts as a corporate partner to sport, you can certainly start to look at how your involvement reflects your own corporate social values. Does your sports partnership reflect your CSR? Are those matched? Or are you saying one thing here and doing one thing over here? I think we also need to help those sport federations work on a longer planning mode. It can be difficult. Organizing committees come and go. They are very temporary companies. So we do need to look to the actors around them that are the steady state. But that is our businesses. Perhaps our academic community can look a little bit more about how we can do more, study some of these issues. And of course, at the grassroots level, people can say, hey, when that big circus comes to town, I want to be a part of it, whether it's socially, whether it's my own small business, or whether it's as a volunteer.
You have a bold vision. Thank you for taking this on and allowing us to see that there are opportunities that we're missing out on. Thank you for coming in and doing this.
Thanks so much. Yeah.